record, I'm just going to say that my name is Ashley Maynor, and Pam Young is also here, and we are interviewing Mr. Jim Bullington at his home on 143 Carriage Lane, and today's date is February 5th, 2008.
It all sounds right.
I think it is.
I've got a couple of questions I'll start out with, and then we can just go from there.
Okay.
Where and when were you born?
I was born in Lynchburg in 1938.
And how long have you lived in Roanoke?
Ever since then, except when I was in the service and like that. But, I mean, this has always been home. Yankee asked me one day if I'd lived here all my life, and I said, not yet.
Yeah. Good answer. Tell us, what neighborhood did you live in Roanoke?
I grew up in South Roanoke. And it was it was really a strange way to grow up, because most people think of South Roanoke as the elite and the moneyed people of Roanoke, and that certainly is true in some cases, but it wasn't in our case. My dad was running the Texas Tavern back then, and we were by far not prosperous, and so if I went into other cities, other areas of the city, like Southeast, Williamson Road, whatever, they'd say, well, there's that South Roanoke kid. But yet the South Roanoke kids that were kids of the richer families, if you didn't belong to the country club, and, you know, if your daddy wasn't, you know, the president of this or president of that, then you didn't get invited to the parties either. So I had to fight either way I went. And It was interesting. The way the social structure was, even with the kids, it was just, as I look back on it, it's disappointing. I don't know if the parents teach that to them or they just get it by osmosis, but I certainly didn't. I never have invited someone into my home or invited them to go to dinner or a movie with us or anything else based on how much money they have or where they work or whatever. And maybe that was one of the lessons I learned by growing up in an environment like that, because it ain't what you got, it's who you are that counts. Long answer to a short question.
Do you have any fond memories of South Roanoke or any stories?
Oh, yeah, the police chased me all over South Roanoke when I was growing up. I knew every alley and every byway and every cut through and every backyard. And there was about two boys, I better not name their names, that we used to entertain ourselves quite well at night. And we didn't have television back then. We never were destructive, but we were mischievous. And we created, you know, our own fun, and there was things we did. For instance, Leip's Drugstore, which is still there, was our favorite hangout. Everybody went to Leip's at night, especially in the summertime. And you'd go in there and get a Coke and maybe a sandwich if you had the money, whatever. But read the comic books. Doc Leip's would let you sit back in the back and little corner back there, and you could read through the comic book. And but there was a guy who lived across the street. There's a department house. It's still there. It's a four-unit apartment, two down, two up, of course. And the guy that lived downstairs on the right-hand side, it was just a real jerk. He didn't like kids. Well, that was his first mistake. The second mistake was letting us know he didn't like kids. Because I probably shouldn't tell this, but we would do things like we'd take a rope and the door to his apartment and the one across the hall open to the inside. So we would take a rope and go over there about 11 o'clock at night, tie a rope to that door handle, go across the way and tie it to his door handle. Then he had a doorbell, and we'd take a toothpick and break it off, push the doorbell in and wedge that buzzer in, so the doorbell kept going off. And it was a buzzer-type doorbell. It'd drive you nuts. You could hear it a block away. And we'd wedge it in that button and push it in and then take off running. Well, we'd go across the street, and the Funkhauser property, which is that, well, that's where all those condominiums and all are now, but then it was just a great big open piece of private property. We could sit over there, we could see through his living room window. You'd see the light come on the bedroom, light come on in the living room. He'd come up to open the door. I couldn't get the door open. And he'd go, he'd have to go all the way around and come around to the front. And he knew we were over across the street up on that hill somewhere. And he'd stand there and just cuss us up one side and down the other. And we'd get caught, just almost get caught half the time, because we'd be laid on the ground rolling, laughing. You know how kids are. But that was some of the tamer things we did. I can tell you all of them. some of the fun things were with the streetcars. As you go up Jefferson Street, up to about 26th Street, I guess it is. It's where the railroad tracks were. It was kind of steep going up through there. And back many years ago, the women, when they cooked, always kept a pan on the stove, and when they would cook meat and bacon and things like that, they'd pour the grease in that pan, and they would just have an accumulation of grease. And many times, like at our home, they made gravy at night. They'd use that grease to make gravy. You'd always have, most of the time, have gravy with your supper. And so my mother always had a can of grease sitting on the stove. Well, I'd sneak in there every now and then, and I'd get a little bit of that grease and put it in a bag, a couple of bags. Then we'd go over to the streetcar tracks where the tracks went up the hill there. And we'd rub that grease all up and down that track and wait for the trolley to come by. And just as he got going up that hill, he had to make that turn. We'd go out and pull the arm at the back. So that arm at the back hooked to the electric wire that was overhead. That's where they got the power to run the trolley. And when you pull the trolley, that's what we used to call it, pull the trolley. When you pull the trolley, they'll lose the power to the motor. And then that thing would just start sliding back downhill. What do you think? I mean, they weren't going to hurt anybody. I mean, it had to stop. But it was really funny to watch it slide backwards. And then, of course, you know, the motorman would always get off and come chasing after us. Never caught us, I don't think. But that was some of the tamer things we did. and then if you got somebody you really didn't like, it was really giving you a hard time. You'd get their garbage cans and find one of the steep hills and roll the garbage can down the hill, and it sounded like a Sherman tank coming down that hill. And then it would hit the bottom. It made a mess. But we didn't do too much. I mean, we didn't leave trash around the streets and stuff like that. But that's a little bit of some of the stuff that went on. Going to what?
To the movies.
Oh yeah. Well, you know, and back in that era, and the 40s in Roanoke were just indescribable. You know, we had come out of the Depression, or they had. I wasn't born till 38. They'd come out of the Depression, and people were fairly prosperous. And once the war, especially, was over, then there was a very positive attitude in the country. And even as a kid, I mean, 1946, 47, 48, I was 8, 9, 10 years old. I can look back on it now, and I can just see downtown, and I can get remembrances of the thoughts and the attitudes. It's so much different than what it is today. George Bush, the smarter senior, I call him the smarter, which ain't hard to be, called it a kinder, gentler time back in that era, and that's exactly what it was, because there was just so many things that were different back in that era. If you were riding the streetcar downtown or riding the bus downtown and a lady got on and there weren't any seats available, there just wasn't any question that you were going to get up and give the lady a seat. And if you didn't get up and give the lady a seat, everybody on the bus, including the driver, was looking at you. Today, I think women have to get up and give some of these so-called men a seat. So, it's a different atmosphere back then, a different time back then. kids, when we addressed adults in my family, if you loved life and wanted to see the sun come up the next day, you said, yes, ma'am, no, ma'am, yes, sir, no, sir. There wasn't any of this, uh-huh, and all that stuff. Not around my own man, anyway. And I liked my teeth where they were, too. I didn't need to have them rearranged anywhere. But it was just the way it was just the way things were then. And downtown especially was so vibrant. In the evenings and especially on weekends, everybody went to town on Saturday. I think a burglar could have gone to any of the outlying suburbs and just cleaned up because every house was empty. Everybody was downtown. You went downtown shopping. People went downtown to the market to buy produce. You went downtown to go to the department stores. We had major department stores downtown. You had Hieronymus and Miller and Rhodes, and then your smaller stores like Beckner's and Cressy's and McCullough's and stores like that. But it was just one retail outlet after another downtown. Shoe stores, Bush Floor Shoe Store, Glenn Minnick's Clothing Company. You know, it just goes on and on and on. I can't remember all of them now, but